And the court will proceed to the sixth case of the day, Van Gilder versus Baker. Mr. King.
May it please the court. My name is Robert King, and I'm going to be arguing today on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Bill Van Gilder. The district court found that Heck versus Humphrey rendered plaintiff's case unsustainable. The district court predicated its decision on a guilty plea that Mr. Van Gilder had entered into in a companion criminal case. The guilty plea that Mr. Van Gilder made was to the crime of resisting law enforcement. The factual basis for that guilty plea are essentially this. Mr. Van Gilder was asked if he forcibly fought back against the officer here. He answered that question yes, and on that basis, he pled guilty. And the trial court in the criminal case accepted the guilty plea. What the district court found after defendants moved for summary judgment, what the district court found is on the basis of Heck versus Humphrey that guilty plea was a bar to Mr. Van Gilder's civil case. In essence, what the district court found was that Mr. Van Gilder, pursuant to Heck, was now attempting to collaterally attack his criminal conviction. In fact, that's not what Mr. Van Gilder is attempting to do. It's Mr. Van Gilder's position that when he pled guilty to conduct that encompasses a very small period of time. He pled guilty to conduct that involved resisting a forced blood draw. And during this forced blood draw, apparently the officer was attempting to put handcuffs on. Mr. Van Gilder resists that effort. And after that happens, there's a kick that Mr. Van Gilder allegedly, he denies making this kick, but there's a kick that he allegedly makes to the face of the arresting officer. After that kick, Mr. Van Gilder is beaten. Testimony varies somewhat, between 8 and 10 times. Between 8 and 10 times. His orbital bones are fractured. What Mr. Van Gilder attempts to do with this civil case, and this is why we think it avoids an application of Heck versus Humphrey, we challenge that beating that he took after he resisted. And he pled guilty to the resist. So the case that Mr. Van Gilder makes is wholly separate and distinct from the criminal case. We would submit that it has nothing to do with the criminal case. The only connection is that there's a temporal connection. One happened before the other. But the gravamen of Van Gilder's argument is that Heck has really no application simply because there are two distinct events. There's a resist and then there's a beating. And what we think the summary judgment motion that was filed by defendant failed to elucidate is how these two acts, these two separate events, the beating and the resist, how they're intertwined. And there's absolutely no evidence. It would be the appellant's contention that there's no evidence before that was submitted to the district court that the conduct that we're suing over civilly is somehow bound up in the criminal conduct, if that if that accurately states the issue. So it would be plaintiff's position that Heck simply does not apply. They're two separate and distinct events. And then second, if Heck doesn't apply, the question then becomes, one of the questions then becomes, should summary judgment be granted on the basis of qualified immunity? And it strains, I think, credulity to suggest that an officer would not know when he's beating somebody, punching him 8, 10, 9 times in the process of breaking his orbital bones, he would not know that's constitutionally prohibited, and that's wrong. So that is the argument.
Your position on Heck versus Humphrey is found appropriate by this panel, Mr. King. What do you feel the issue of qualified immunity should be resolved at this level, or is that a matter to be remanded for consideration by a district court?
Your Honor, I believe in Judge Sharp's district court opinion, he did not reach the issue of qualified immunity. I know my colleague, Mr. Collier Magar, has asked this court, in the event that the court finds that Heck does not apply, to decide the issue of qualified immunity. It would be plaintiff's position that issue should be decided by the district court. It should be remanded on that basis.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Thank Very you. Good. Mr. Collier Magar?
I will try to be brief since I'm the last to go today.
Feel no pressure to...
No pressure.
You should address the court as if you were the first case.
All right. May it please the court.
That's counsel. Why they pay us to hear all these cases.
Well, Your Honor, let me address the Heck versus Humphrey issue first. As I was searching for cases in another separate situation, a number of drug lords have been convicted in Indiana, and now they're taking identical complaints and suing police, claiming that they're stealing their money as they're after their arrest. I came across a decision by the Seventh Circuit, which I did not cite in the brief. It's Okoro versus Callahan. That's a decision that was written by Judge Posner.
You're not allowed to cite that unless you gave opposing counsel.
I came across it last night, Your Honor.
Now,
so
you cannot
cite it.
You can serve us with that and also serve counsel, but
may I file that after the arguments, Your Honor?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
You
will do that.
A week to do that.
And since you can't argue that, why don't we get to the bottom line? How would a verdict in favor of the plaintiff in this case cast doubt on the criminal conviction? Because that's that's what we're really getting.
Your Honor, he stated that he forcibly resisted the officer.
Right.
And he was charged with the felony of battering the officer.
Right.
And he entered into a plea agreement where the state prosecuting attorney dropped that felony.
So he pled guilty. So again, how would this case, which is an excessive force case, how would that cast doubt on the conviction? How would that give him some way to collaterally attack the conviction?
Well, it does. It challenges the validity of the guilty verdict by denying.
No, it doesn't at all.
No, that's the problem. That's what I don't understand that. The conviction stands. He got his conviction. This is about excessive force. Excessive force doesn't have anything to do with whether he resisted. And how could this case even be used in any way to deal with the criminal case?
Well, the chain in the events, Your Honor, was that as the blood's being drawn, he kicks the officer in the head.
We get that. We understand all that.
And the officer, in response, punches the man. We don't deny that he punches him and that he's injured.
Right.
My officer is injured as well.
He punches him 10 times and then he smashed the...
Yeah, but if that's right...
Right.
He can resist and also have been beaten.
He was struck, Your Honor. There's no doubt about it. He got a black eye. He did not sustain a serious injury as badly as the officer did. The officer ended up with a concussion to the brain.
Well, that might be a matter for a jury to decide that he...
And that's why he was charged, Your Honor.
What happened, but I don't, just don't see how heck could bar this case.
Well, since I can't argue the other case that I mean,
a typical heck bar case is somebody, say, convicted of robbery, and then they file a civil lawsuit against the police claiming they were framed, and you can't proceed there unless you vacate the underlying conviction. That's what heck stands for, doesn't it?
Well... I believe that Judge Sharp got it right, Your Honor, that heck did apply.
Yeah, I'd say that, too, if I was standing where you
yeah.
are.
That's the truth. And there are no other cases that you can find. I mean, I can't wait to see this case you're going to submit, but, I mean, there's a reason I think you haven't been able to find cases that are analogous to this case because they don't exist. Not this kind of situation where the person pled, you know, pled to resisting, and then, you know, brought an excessive force claim.
Well, I think that this court should and actually has deemed that it's irrelevant if the plaintiff disclaims any intention of challenging his conviction, if by making these allegations that are inconsistent with the fact that he had kicked the officer, he had been charged with battery upon the police officer, there was a plea bargain, they dropped that in exchange for him to plead guilty to a resisting arrest, resisting law enforcement. He was already under arrest. On that basis, that undermines the validity of his guilty plea. And the issue with respect to this beating, this is his terminology that he is trying to present to you. This is a gentleman who was 0.214 drunk. The district court made reference to that.
And even if all that is true, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter for purposes of the conviction and the heck bar. Nobody, you know, so
matter.
We just have, you know,
I can see where I can see where the votes are, Your Honor.
It goes to a jury to try to get damages here.
Right. It will matter when it goes to the jury. It would matter. It would matter whether the officer was injured, and, you know, that's how the jury would make the determination.
Well, then let me skip to the second issue, that being qualified immunity, which I believe that you can rule upon and should rule upon in this instance. There's been no analogous case that has been submitted that shows that my officer acted improperly. We have cited the cases for you. We've cited Brousseau, Roy versus Lewiston, Saucier versus Katz, which the opinion was rendered 3 days before this arrest. All show that in an objective sense, this officer acted appropriately, as any other officer would have acted after being kicked in the head. We have this nurse who was fearful for her safety. She was fearful that this man might get the gun off of the officer, and the officer protected himself as well as the attending nurses who were there in the emergency room by keeping this man under control. This man, as he was charged with, potentially could have had a lethal kick to the brain. He hit the officer in the temple, and we simply believe that his response was appropriate and the qualified immunity should be granted.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Collier-McGarr.
All right.
Mr. King.
just a couple brief points. If Judge Sharp's application of heck is correct, what you'll have is, or potentially have, is a blanket protection for officers in cases involving resisting law enforcement, where someone might resist in the smallest of way, be guilty of that crime. There would be no legitimate legal defense. He resists in a very small manner. He's charged with a misdemeanor crime of resisting law enforcement. The officer subsequently gets mad, beats the guy up, pummels him, and then under Judge Sharp's application of heck, then that officer has a blanket protection. Theoretically, I suppose, he could kill the man. The officer could kill the man subsequent to the resist, and the officer has protection under Heck. And I don't think that's the law. I just wanted to also point out that Heck also, and this is a subtle point, but says that...
Hope we can get it.
Okay. Heck says, Judge, that the civil case can go forward as long as it doesn't necessarily undermine the criminal conviction. Doesn't necessarily. And I think clearly here we meet, this doesn't necessarily undermine the criminal case. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Colley McGar. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.
Discretion of the jury, and there has to be a Thank you. Hey, do you think extra pants?
Do we need more?
Yeah, I need more. Pull some soup.
Judge Pence is in the first opening.
Okay. Let me see. I'll look. Wouldn't hurt to look. Wouldn't hurt to look.